Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. I've been traveling a bit, and it's really nice to get back to the IG lives. Many of our followers turn to us to help growing their families during this trying to conceive process, and then lowering your chemical burdens can be useful in helping your family while trying to conceive, especially if you're going through the IVF process. And the IVF has becoming a really viable and successful option for many families, with increasing interest happening over the last few years. And this option might be a good choice for your family. And in the past, just a few months ago, we had Dr. Jessica Bauer coming in on the Instagram Live talking about the differences between IVF, IUI, and all these good stuff. And today we have invited Dr. Rahi Victory to talk to us about the IVF process. Dr. Victory is an obstetrician gynecologist and reproductive endocrinologist and infertility specialist at the Victory Reproductive Care in Toronto, Canada. So Dr. Victory is going to tell us what to expect during the IVF process. So I'm Hello, hi, Dr. Victory.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. I've been a
Oh, thanks
fan of
for
your
having me.
online content.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about your background and then how you become an OBGYN and a reproductive endocrinologist and infertility specialist.
Wow. Okay. So I was born in Iran, but we moved here when I was very, very little, 8 months old, to Canada. And I knew from a very young age I wanted to be a doctor and to help people. And so I ended up going through medical school and then OBGYN. And then I went to the US to become a fertility specialist. So I got my board certification in Canada and in the US. And so, yeah, ever since then, I've been a fertility specialist and reproductive endocrinologist. And I still maintain a lot of minimally invasive surgery. And in very stark contrast to many other places, I still deliver babies, believe it or not. So it's kind of because I get to see it from the cellular level all the way out to getting the chance to hand people their baby. So it's pretty neat. I really love it.
That is really cool because I remember when I was seeing my fertility specialist, he was only seeing me until 13 weeks. And then after that, I'm kicked off to other people. So it's really awesome to see that you're actually from the very, very beginning all the way to hand people their baby. That's so wonderful.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Yeah. It's a
So
very enjoyable part of it for us, for sure.
in your words, what is the reproductive endocrinology and infertility specialist? What do you guys do?
Yeah, so there's kind of two major parts to it. So the majority of what we do is the infertility portion, which is essentially helping people who are having trouble either creating their family or conceiving. So we do a lot of that work. We do some fertility preservation work where men need to freeze their sperm or women need to freeze their eggs and so on. So that's the majority of the work that we do. And then some of the work that we do involves things like hormones for menopause or women that are experiencing problems with hormonal fluctuations, or they've got thyroid disease. Sometimes it'll be prolactin problems, things like that. So anything that is a reproductive related hormone that the normal endocrinologist, who these days pretty much just focus on diabetes, doesn't do, will take over a lot of that work and deal with problems with FSH, LH, sometimes steroids, things like polycystic ovarian syndrome, and those kinds of things. And then many of us also kind of develop a bit of a specialty for some of the surgical problems that can lead to infertility problems, fibroids, endometriosis, ovarian cysts, things like that.
So, because infertility is a big part of your work, I know a lot of people seek out for IVF. So, what drew you to IVF?
Well, I kind of love all of infertility. I'm a big proponent of telling people not everything is IVF. So IVF is a wonderful tool and it's very useful. And there are many, many people that will benefit from doing IVF, but it's not necessary for everybody. There's a lot of people out there that don't have to do IVF. They'll be fine without it. So the thing I love about IVF is that it's in the right hands, and if you use the right techniques and with a good team, you can be incredibly successful. So, there are only so many things we have at our disposal as tools that we can use to help people. You have options like surgery, or it's helping people make an egg or extra eggs, getting the sperm and the egg together with something like insemination, or you get to do IVF. And when you do IVF, the big advantage of doing IVF is that you can really get a much higher success rate than you can with insemination or even the surgery. So it's kind of something that naturally draws the physician to it, because I tell patients, look, if you do 6 cycles of insemination, which is minimum going to take you 6 months, you're going to get a 30% chance of having a live birth. But if you do 1 cycle of IVF, sometimes you can give them, a virtual guarantee that they'll have a baby, and not just one, but two or three from just one try. So there's a big gap in success. And because of that, it's a really nice tool to have and to use.
Yeah, so for those who are like unaware in layman's term, what is IVF? Like, when should a person consider like
Yeah,
IVF?
that's a fabulous question. What is IVF? IVF is the process where essentially we take eggs from a woman and we get them out of her body, and we take sperm from a man, and we in the lab are able to connect those two together. And there's two ways to do that. One is you just put the egg and the sperm in the dish and you pray a little bit and you hope by morning. And the other one is that you actually kind of individually pick the best sperm, and then you take the egg and you can actually inject the sperm right into the egg. And that's a process called ICSI, intracytoplasmic sperm injection. So ICSI works really well and gives you this amazing success rate. And so we do a lot of ICSI. If it's done well by someone very skilled, you can get 90, 95, even 100% fertilization. So once you fertilize the embryo, you grow it. And you grow it for usually 5 to 7 days, usually 5 to 6 being the optimal time. And you can then take those embryos either fresh, which is less and less a good option, or frozen, which is a better and better option, and take them and put them back in the woman's uterus with a very high chance of success for, the ability to produce an embryo and a pregnancy.
So who should consider IVF? Like,
Yeah, I mean, there are people that should consider it. There are people that could consider it, and there are people that have to do it. So people that must do it are people with, sperm blockage, where you have to extract the sperm. You'll never get enough to do insemination. People where the woman's tubes are blocked, you have to do it as well. If there is very severe male factor, you don't have to do it, but it makes a lot of sense to do it because otherwise your chances are very low. And same thing with severe endometriosis. Women with severe endo have a difficult time without doing IVF. People that should do it, women that are older, because the older that you get, the harder it is to be successful and the less successful the other things are. And I don't mean just all women that are older, infertile women that are older. So if you're 39 and you've already been trying for 2 years, it's definitely something reasonable to consider. Again, people with endo, people with moderate to severe male factor, they should all consider doing it, or at least should do it. And then certainly people that have any kind of genetic problem where we can screen out the genetic abnormalities, those are all people that really should do it. Everybody else, like, they could do it. So if your, sperm is not the greatest, or you don't have a ton of eggs, you can do IVF. You don't have to do IVF. You can try insemination first. But IVF is a great choice. It's always going to give you a better chance. It's just a matter of, is this worth it for you or not?
Right. So now let's talk about the process. So what type of hormone does a woman receive when they start IVF?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we kind of have learned to mimic your own body's response to some extent. So in a kind of garden variety approach to IVF, we will start by having women take FSH, which is what your body naturally produces at the start of a cycle. And in many cases now, we know that we need to add a little bit of LH as well. And by adding the FSH and the LH together, we get the eggs to start growing. Once the eggs get to the point where they're ready or mature, we can start using medication to prevent them from releasing, because your estrogen levels start to go up. And as they go up, your brain thinks, oh, it's time to release an egg. And we don't want that to happen yet because the eggs need to continue growing. So we give you medication to prevent the eggs from releasing. And then eventually you get to the point where we need to make the eggs release. And at that point, there's what we call a trigger injection. And there are different ways to do that, but we give you a trigger injection and then you pick up the eggs. So that's kind of the basic process. Now, lately, we have a lot of more advanced techniques. So for patients that have weaker ovaries, there are additional medications, additional hormones that we use, things like DHEA, human growth hormone, testosterone, estrogen priming. There's a lot of different kind of tricks we have at our disposal. But the main actors are FSH, LH, and then the preventing drug, and then the trigger. So there's really four parts to it.
So what can a woman expect to experience as the hormones start to, you know, stimulate ovaries, fluctuates?
Yeah, so I'd say in the majority of cases, depending on how many eggs you're producing, the most significant symptom is just a little bit of pressure. Not pain, not horrible discomfort, just pressure because your ovaries are going to grow. And as they grow and take up a lot more space than they're normally taking up, you'll feel that extra sense of fullness in your pelvis. There are some women that can get emotional disturbances from it. Like they'll feel moody. They'll get quite bloated. They can have some weight gain, occasionally even things like acne, but they're really pretty rare. So the majority of women just come in and say, oh, I can feel it. Like, that's all they'll say to me. I hear that expression over and over again. I can feel it. So they're not feeling considerable pain. They're not feeling nausea or vomiting or anything like that. They just feel like, hey, I can tell my ovaries are bigger than they normally are. And I always trust the woman's intuition. So when they tell me that, I see, yep, you're growing. And that's, you know, something good, because that's what we want them to do. Yeah. You just need to be careful as the doctor and not overdo it.
Right. So how many injections do you usually get throughout this process?
So at a minimum, you're starting with one per day. We usually start with two. And then later into the cycle, you're usually looking at three per day. Some centers will get away with just one or two. But most places are doing, you know, two to three throughout the cycle. And then at the end, the trigger shots are two more injections if you're doing it properly, one if you're doing it improperly. Yeah.
So we're talking about the cycle lasts like 2 weeks or 4 weeks?
Yeah. So the actual taking of the medications should really never exceed 11 to 12 days. There's good data that shows that if you go past 11 or 12 days with your stimulation, but the egg quality is diminished and the results are going to be way less successful and way less, you know, significant. So we really try hard to make sure that our women are trying to trigger the release of the eggs by day 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. And then we pick up the eggs after that, usually about 36 hours after the trigger. So you should really be done within 2 weeks starting the stimulation. If you're going past 2 weeks, they're really compromising your outcome. And it's probably one of the most common things I see from people that come to me for a second opinion. I'll say, how long did you stimulate for? And they'll say, oh, I stimulated for 17 days and then I took my trigger. And I'm going, what? Like, that makes no sense. So yeah, you don't want to go too long. The egg quality really goes down.
You literally just answered my next question, is, you know, how long after the injection you retrieve the egg. But what about the sperm? Like, does the timing of the sperm, like retrieving the sperm for IVF, matters? Or like, when do you get the sperm?
Yeah, so it does matter very much so. We have people that have frozen sperm samples. So that can be used well in advance, and we can keep the sperm sample frozen for a variety of different reasons. Maybe they're undergoing chemo or surgery, or they're away. Sometimes they live in Europe and they're coming to us, so they come and leave the sperm with us ahead of time. So we can use frozen sperm ahead of time. If you're getting it fresh, you usually want it a few hours before you're going to actually inject the eggs with the sperm. And then if the men have something called high DNA fragmentation in the sperm, which is a lot of damage to the sperm DNA, you actually want to get them to ejaculate once and then 3 hours later ejaculate again. And that second sample has much lower DNA fragmentation than the first one. And so you'll see a significant improvement in success.
Oh, wow. So then how does the fertilization take place? Because you have to put the egg and the sperm together, right?
Yeah. So there's two ways to do IVF. So one is conventional IVF, which is you take the egg and you put it in a little petri dish, you drop it in there, and then you pour in some sperm. And like I said earlier, you kind of put your hands together, say a quiet prayer, and you're hoping that it works. In the very, very best of circumstances, you're going to get somewhere around a 50 to 60% chance that you will get the eggs to fertilize. The alternative is to do something called intracytoplasmic sperm injection, or ICSI for short, ICSI. And with that process, we are taking one egg, we are picking the very best sperm, you put it in a microscope needle, and then you literally inject that sperm right into the egg. The beauty of doing that is that in the right hands, and that's an important part of the puzzle, you can get very, very high fertilization rates. So you're moving now from 50 to 60% with conventional IVF up to maybe 90, 95%. We're typically pretty close to 100% with the ICSI process. So, you know, when these eggs are quite precious, our women warriors, who I love each and every one of them, are going through a lot to get to the point where we can do a retrieval. You don't want to compromise any of those eggs. So we're big believers in ICSI, but that's because our success rates are much higher. A lot of the studies say it's not needed, but they're based on 70% ICSI success rates. That's just too low. I mean, we wouldn't, you know, I would fire my lap if they had a 70% success rate.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then once the fertilization happens, how long does it take to start creating the embryos?
Yeah, so you've really kind of created the embryo right away once you've conducted the fertilization. We then grow them for somewhere between 5 to 7 days. The day fives are the best. Day sixes are still very good. Day seven is not so great if you've got a day seven. There's still some chance, but it starts to dwindle and you can't go past day seven. So you'll take those embryos day 5 to 7, and then if they're day five, you can transfer them back into the patient fresh. If they're day six or day seven, you have to freeze them, get the patient ready in another cycle, and then bring them back to do the embryo transfer.
So what's the embryo transfer process then? You really have to sync the time with the patient's cycle, right, to prep her for the embryo transfer.
It depends. So there are natural approaches to it, and there are hormone replacement or artificial approaches to it. So in a natural program, yeah, you absolutely have to time it perfectly. So you're kind of following along with her natural cycle. You're waiting for her to release the egg. And typically once she gets an LH surge, which is your hormone marker in your own body that you're getting ready to release an egg, you do the embryo transfer about 7 days later if it's a day five or a day six embryo. When you're doing a program cycle, you could literally call me and say, hey, I'm ready to have my embryo transfer on August the 20th, and I can not guarantee you I'll get it there, but I can probably target it within a few days. So with a program cycle, we have the ability to kind of make your body do what we want it to do and adjust it to your schedule. So the timing is okay. We can manage the timing. The process is incredibly variable depending on who is providing the treatment for you. So there are a lot of places worldwide that have very, what I call cookie cutter approaches to embryo transfer, which is basically, here's some estrogen. Okay, now you're ready for some progesterone. Okay, show up for your embryo transfer. I find personally that that's insufficient. It's ignoring a whole wealth of science and data on the value of other things like vitamins and supplements and keeping the estrogen levels low and monitoring the progesterone levels. And so there's a whole kind of art to ART, assisted reproductive technology. And, you know, I really like to focus on having a very holistic approach for our patients, because we know they do a lot better when we take that holistic approach. For the patients who don't have a holistic approach to this, it's definitely a lower success rate, in my opinion, and they do quite as well. And it rapidly becomes frustrating because they go back to their doctor and their doctor said, we're just going to do the same thing again. We're just going to do the same thing again. And no one wants to hear that when they're facing failure. They want to hear, hey, I have something I think we can try that will help you. So I kind of favor that approach a lot more.
Absolutely. So how long after the embryo transfer will you know if a patient's pregnant?
Well, no one ever listens to us and they test right away. So most patients will start testing on their own somewhere around 6 to 8 days later after the embryo transfer. I strongly discourage people from doing that because depending on which test you purchased, it's not that accurate. So we set your test for about the 2 week mark, and we're really hoping that at the 2 week mark, you know, we'll know for sure, yes or no. I would say probably somewhere around 80% of our patients ignore that and start testing at home. So with a really good home kit, you can probably find about 7 to 8 days after the embryo transfer that you're pregnant.
Yeah. Wow. I just really love your personalized approach. And so tell us, like, what does a session with you look like? How can people find you and work with you?
Yeah, sure. So we're very easy to find. We're available on the web at drvictory.com. I do find a lot of people reach out to DM me on Instagram. So it's just rahivictory.md. And if you're just trying to get a consult with us, you just email info@drvictory.com, drvictory.com, and just say, I want a consult, and they'll set it up. I usually spend about an hour on my first consult. So I really like to learn about my patients, understand that, what they're going through, and everything, that is needed. And then once I understand what they're going through, we talk about their specific case. If there are things I can address right then and there, then I will. And I really like to save people money if I can. So where I can kind of find things that are easy fixes, we target those and we address those right away. For everybody else, usually there's a fair bit of testing that's required. And so we'll kind of move into a testing phase and we'll spend some time doing their testing. And then we bring them back and review the results of those tests. I'm a big believer in options. So I never tell people you need IVF. I actually tell everybody it's just one of many options. And so I'll go through each and every option, whether it's, you know, have less sex or more sex or take some vitamins. Or sometimes it's, you can consider insemination. And yes, sometimes it's IVF and other times it's surgery. Hey, your cervix is really tight. Stretch it open. You'll be fine. And it's a 5-minute surgery and they do well. So I really try and custom tailor the approach to each patient. But I think patients, especially fertility patients, they experience this huge loss of control, right? Because all their lives they've been fine. They could do what they wanted. Now they have this relationship and now they are trying to have a family. And all of a sudden, you know, something behind the scenes has hit the brakes and you're not achieving what you want. And that loss of control can be really psychologically, emotionally traumatic. So we really believe in restoring that control back to the patients. And in order to do that, you've got to give them choices and options. So my job is not to tell you what to do. It's to educate you about what's going on, educate you about your options, and then let you choose something that's right for you. I certainly give everybody advice, but ultimately it's their choice to decide what they want to do. And I really respect that in people. They need to feel good about the decision that they've made and comfortable with the decision they've made.
I know you're super passionate about education because you do have a show, and I'm a fan, like Back to Fiction, with Come to Fertility, where you review just like all the up-to-date, a lot of scientific research and information. So tell us about a little bit about the show.
Sure. So it actually came out of a test that was being done that was useless, but everybody was still using it. And there was scientific proof proving that it didn't work. But I kept talking to people and I was seeing other fertility specialists online saying, oh, we do this. And I thought, yeah, this doesn't make any sense. So we decided we would do this live program and talk to people about it. And you know, when we did it, we basically realized there was an audience for this and people liked it. And they in particular wanted to ask us questions live. So what we then did was we kind of explored a little bit, saw what other people were doing. And very, very few people were actually taking live questions on a weekly basis. And so I said, you know, this is a great opportunity to help people. We can present something and then take their questions. Interestingly, no one cares about the presentations. They all just want their questions. That's it. But I still do it. So if we find something really interesting, we'll present it. And there isn't always something interesting every week. So some weeks we have a topic, some weeks we just go into questions. But it's been great because it keeps me really sharp. I got to read nonstop to stay on top of things so that I'm ready to answer people's questions. And, you know, every once in a while, we even learn from the audience. So people will say, hey, what do you think about this? And I've never heard of it before. And we'll go look it up and see if it's valuable or not. So it's called Fertility Factor Fiction. It's usually Tuesday nights at 8. That's Eastern Standard Time. And we're on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Most people tend to watch us on IG or on YouTube. So, you know, that's an easy way to get to us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for all this great information. And I will be sure to link all the YouTube show and then the website, everything promoting this Instagram Live. So thank you everyone for joining us. Make sure to follow Dr. Victory at rockyvictory.md on IG. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I hope you guys all are well. And don't hesitate to watch the show tonight. If you have questions, just ask and we'll answer.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Okay. Bye. Bye.